रामाय राम भद्राय रामचंद्राय वेदसे रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीताय पतये नमः। अयोध्या कांड चैप्टर नंबर 100 किंगक्राफ्ट द रेसिटेशन बिगिंस नाउ। The moment he saw Bharata, Rama inferred that his brother had assumed the functions of royalty, and he instructed him in the science of government under the guise of making kindly inquiries, for he would have no chance to teach him his duty when he should come to know that Dashrath was dead and that Bharata had renounced his throne, electing to live the life of a recluse. He said to himself in wonder, "Our father used to exclaim at the sight of fragrant reeds and flowers, 'These would look well on the hair of my darling Bharata,' and that Bharata comes to me now with matted locks. If fine robes and garments were brought to him, he would at once exclaim, 'It would look well if Bharata wore these,' and that Bharata is now clad in deerskin and strips of bark. It is almost impossible for my father to make Bharata accept any present from him. And that Bharata is now obliged to entreat from others with clasped hands what he wants for himself. No bed of flowers was soft enough for Bharata, but Messiah would always seat his darling on his lap. No one there could contain his grief to see Bharata in his miserable plight lie in the dust, shorn of his dazzling luster like the glorious Lord of Light at the end of the day of Brahma. Worn out to a shadow, pale and haggard, his very mother could not make him out. Rama raised him up, embraced him warmly, smelled the crown of his head, and kept back his rebellious grief to console him who came into the world along with him. 'Darling,' said he, 'how is it that I see you here in this dreary forest? Does it not lie upon you to wait upon our sire and render him every service? Where has he gone? He could never miss you for a moment. There is no chance of your coming to these woods if he were alive. Your long journey from the Kekia country fills me with surprise. How is it that I see you emaciated, pale, a ghost of your former bright self? What brought you here to these frightful wastes? His Majesty, is he among the living? If so, you have his permission to come to see me here. He cannot live away from you. Then, has it been consumed by overwhelming grief? Have powerful foes taken base advantage of our misfortune and youth and wrested the crown from your hands? Or have your subjects taken to heart my exile at the orders of Kaiki and driven away their unpopular ruler? This kingdom has belonged to us from the very beginnings of time. Or have you wearied of service at the feet of your father of unparalleled valor and come here to seek else and independence? Is it all well with the Emperor Dashrata, high-born, truthful, righteous, and crowned with hundreds of Ashwamedhas and Rajasuyas? Are you here the bearer of the tidings of some serious illness of his, brought on by the sight of the untold evil wrought through the promise made to Kaiki? Kaushalya, my mother, whom endless grief has marked for its own, fare she well? I hope Sumitra has nothing to vex her, who gave to the world those noble heroes, Lakshmana and Shatrughna. And Kaiki, your mother, who deserves my devotion and love more than they, does her heart rejoice now that her hopes have been amply realized? Does Maharishi Vasishtha, the guru of our race, continue to receive at your hands the worship and reverence offered to him by the kings of the lines of Ikshvaku? A knower of Brahman is he, and the master of all sciences and arts. His wisdom is equaled by his holiness and the spiritual luster engendered of it. Do you render due respect and veneration to your chaplain who assists Vasishtha? An utter stranger to pride and envy, nobly born, a well of wisdom, he is known to be totally selfless. He is proficient in the mysteries of yagas and yajnas, from the Agnihotra to the Ashwamedha. He tends the holy fires ever watchfully, of mighty intellect. He practices the dharma of this world and the next with equal zeal and sincerity. Does he keep you in mind at stated times of the offerings to the fires, past and future? Do you gratify the gods by sacrifices, your parents by cheerful obedience and affectionate service, your gurus by reverence, meet and faithful devotion, your kinsmen by loading them with favors, your elders in age, wisdom and holiness by humble salutation, and the brahmanas and the other literati by liberal gifts? Do you honor, as he deserves, Sudhanva, your master in the science of war and government? Are your counselors intelligent, nobly born, versed in statecraft, adepts at reading the hearts of others, and faithful even as yourself? Councils of state, matured by the deliberations of expert politicians and religiously guarded, conduce to the success of the king's projects? Do you carefully regulate your hours of work and sleep? Are your waking thoughts in the morning devoted to the improvement of the resources of your kingdom? Taking counsel of none and taking counsel of all are equally to be avoided. Our own judgments are far from impartial in the matter of carefully weighing the pros and cons of affairs. Bias and prejudice are more likely to wrap our hearts. Unity of judgment and secrecy are hopeless in a council of many. I hope your projects do not leak out ere they are accomplished. Slow to decide but quick to act, do the forces that you employ bring in a golden harvest thousandfold? Time takes to itself the results of dilatory actions. Your plans and schemes should announce themselves to the subject kings only when they have borne fruit, but never at the early or middle stages. Do you guard your state secrets so carefully that others despair of getting at them through guess or inference or observation? Do you pass over thousands of ordinary people to select one man of intellect and talents who goes about his work calmly, carefully, and thoroughly? Such a one is invaluable in national crisis and deadlocks, for you can rely upon him to bring you out of the difficulty with enhanced fame and prestige. Thousands and crores of thick-witted, big-headed counselors are but a broken reed for the king to lean upon when a kingdom's existence hangs on their wise and prompt action. A good and able minister will secure boundless glory to his king and the subject princes. He should be firm and unshaken of purpose, careful and deliberate in his actions, expert in the mysteries of kingcraft, and aware of the projects and plans of his enemies as soon as they are formed. I hope your superior servants are employed in preparing and serving your meal and such. The middle class should be used to look after the sleeping accommodations, seats and conveyances. The lower rank should be engaged in cleaning the feet, pressing them and taking charge of your slippers. These distinctions should be carefully observed, else you will sow a plentiful crop of jealousy and spite. Kings used to test the loyalty and attachments of their ministers and counselors by sending them through secret channels fine robes, ornaments, conveyances, and other valuable articles purporting to be presents from the royal ladies or from other monarchs, and carefully watching them the while. I hope your ministers have passed through such tests successfully. Of course, they have served your house for generations. They are pure and unsullied in thought, word, and deed, and are employed only in very important affairs. O son of Kaikeyi, I hope you do not cruelly punish your subjects and drive them to carry their complaints to your ministers, who restrain you in consequence. Sacrificial priests scorn a man who desires to engage their services in a rite to be financed by the proceeds of his iniquitous profession, if he has made his wealth by accepting gifts that are condemned by the Vedas. Good women loathe him who would force their love. Even so, your people will shun and execrate you if you punish the innocent and fill your coffers with wealth extorted from them by cruel torture. There is a particular class of men, arch-fiend to be nearer truth, who are adepts in the use of the four means: conciliation, bribery, dissension, and force. They are experts in the theory and practice of self-aggrandizement and exploitation of others, taught by Ranaka, Chanakya, and other luminaries of that school. They lie in wait for chances to blacken the characters of trusted servants of the king and temper with their fidelity. Fear is a thing unknown to them in their nefarious task of wringing the heart of the monarch, and they are ever intent on making themselves masters of his wealth and power in course of time. If you come upon any of the species, kill him at once and surely, else he is sure to take your life or your kingdom. I hope you have not harbored any such demon unawares. I trust you have not dismissed our commander-in-chief and appointed another in his place. He is ever supremely content and magnifies the kindness and consideration of his master. He is the terror of his foes. His subtle mind is ever occupied with arraying his phalanxes to suit the enemy's tactics, breaking through their serried ranks and leading his men to greater glory. No danger takes him unawares. The soul of loyalty and devotion, pure of heart and deed, of high lineage, his capacity for work is something marvelous. Do you carefully inquire into the antecedents and test the courage of your chief warriors and attach them to yourself by honors and presents? I hope they are remarkable for their strength, veterans in every branch of warfare of exceptional valor and prowess, and endow them with noble virtues. Do you pay your troops regularly and provide them with rations suited to their work? Else the paid servants turn against their master and prove faithless, which leads to great evils. Is every member of the warrior caste devoted to you, heart and soul, and ready to lay down their lives for you? Your ambassadors, plenipotentiaries, representatives, and consuls are, I hope, your countrymen, trained to read the hearts of others and deal with every contingency successfully. Quick and apt in reply, they should be able to deliver your message and the answer to the letter. They should ever keep their master's directions in mind and secure his interests, though speaking on many a topic to throw the other party off the scent. They should be endowed with extraordinary powers of discrimination and analysis. 18 persons there are whom a king should put to the severest tests possible: the prime minister, the high priest, the heir apparent, the commander-in-chief, the captain of the wardens of the gate, the superintendent of the harem, the inspector general of the prisons, the president of the board of revenue, the proclaimer of the king's commands to the people, the judges, the advocate general and his staff, the paymaster of forces, the captain of the night watch whose duty it is to go about the town in disguise and guard the gates, the walls and the fortifications, the paymaster of the hired servants, the master of ceremonies and the majordomo, the head of those who decorate the audience hall every day, arrange the seats in the order of precedence, receive and lead to their places the members of the audience, keep out those as have not the right of entry, preserve the order and silence, and watch over the safety of the hall. The head of those who execute the king's decrees of punishment on criminals, the general-in-chief of the troops that garrison the fortresses, the commander of the frontier forts and troops. Of these, the first three are ever near the king and need not be put to the test, as he can observe them himself. The others on his side and the whole 18 on the enemy's side, should every one of them be under the constant observation of three spies, cleverly disguised, unknown to one another, to see whether they discharge their duties aright. I hope you do not neglect, as weak and powerless, the foes that have been exiled from your dominions and have returned after the period. Surely they would not have come back without having secured some strong support. Keep careful watch over them. Do you carefully avoid the company of the Baudhas and the Chakravakas and other atheistic Brahmanas? They are proficient in instilling heretical principles into the minds of the unwary. Ever the enemies of true wisdom, their self-conceit is equaled only by their ignorance. Their intellects ever run contrary to the tenor of the holy scriptures. They would not set aside the Tamasa, Smritis and Puranas and interpret according to the traditional canons of our great men, those composed by the Maharishis and recognized as authoritative by the good. They bring bare, dry logic to prove that they are useless to secure our ends here and hereafter. Ayodhya, our capital, is a home of renowned warriors. Our house holds sway over it from the very dawn of time. The people there, of all castes and orders, perform their duties conscientiously and to their best level. Of restrained senses and boundless energy, they are endowed with every noble excellences. Further, that city is a favorite resort of the highest exponents of every science and art. The citizens lead lives of happy content, gifted with every natural and artificial advantages. Its fortifications are the despair of the enemy. Adorned with noble fanes, palaces, and mansions of the nobles, teeming with splendid elephants and horses, camels and other animals, it well deserves the name unassailable. Do you bestow every care in guarding our fair capital? Our dominions are thickly dotted with sacrificial grounds, the scene of many an Ashwamedha, Chayana and other holy rites. People are devotedly attached to their country and would not exchange it for any other on earth. They have over them a ruler after their own heart and a land almost perfect in every way. Beautiful temples and good roads lined with pools, tanks, public water boots and reservoirs used for the purposes of irrigation abound everywhere. Very little of the land lies uncultivated. Countless herds of cattle roam the pastures. It is free from such pests as drought, excessive rainfall, rats, locusts, birds, and proximity to the abodes of the king. The soil is not dry or arid, depending solely upon timely rains, but the country is covered with a network of rivers, canals, and other appliances of irrigation. Green fields, gardens, and groves delight the eye at every turn. Robbers, highwaymen, brigands, and thieves are conspicuous by their absence, equally with the wild beasts of the forests. Honeycombed with mines of gold, silver, and diamonds, it is no place for sinners. The men and women in it spend long years of happiness and comfort. In the woods that line the banks of the rivers and the lakes, fairs are held on fixed days where merchants gather and a brisk trade is carried on. I hope every part of our kingdom enjoys peace and plenty. Are the farmers and herdsmen in your empire growing in wealth and comfort? And do they lift their hearts to you in love and homage? Do trade and commerce flourish in your dominions? Are your exports and imports, sale and barter, steadily increasing? A king should govern all classes and grades justly and wisely. Do you see to it that they enjoy every comfort and convenience and are sedulously guarded from sorrow and danger? Do you treat your women with kindness and sympathy? Do you take watchful care that they do not hold private interviews or talks with other men? You will do well not to place too much confidence in them, for they are by nature fickle and weak-willed and cannot keep secrets. So keep your counsels to yourself. Do you keep your forests where the elephants are raised, carefully concealed from others? Else they fall into the hands of your enemies. The breed of she-elephants that are used in catching the males, is it visibly increasing? I hope you are steadily adding to your studs of horses, the elephants, male and female. Do you give audience to your subjects every morning, dressed in your royal robes? Else they begin to suspect that you are ill or that something untoward has befallen you. Do you make yourself too easily accessible to your servants? For they grow tall with pride and slight you. Nor deny yourself to them absolutely, for they have no chance to speak their hearts to you. They turn away from your presence, and it seriously interferes with the affairs of the state. So always adopt the golden mean. Are your forts amply provided with money, corn, weapons, archers, engineers, a never-failing supply of water, and other warlike gear? Does your expenditure fall much below your income? I trust you do not scatter your wealth among the unworthy objects such as pimps, panders, singers and dancers. Brahmanas, gods, warriors, friends and the poor are fitter recipients thereof. I believe there is no one in your kingdom of exemplary purity and truthfulness upon whom is sprung a sudden change of theft or peculation, and who is put to death for his wealth without due and careful inquiry being made by experts in law and shastra. I am sure that no thief or robber is caught red-handed and, after fair trial, escapes punishment in consequence of an arrangement he makes with the officers of justice that he will give over to them the stolen articles. Are your judges conscientious and brave enough to decide on the side of right in a suit between a rich man and a poor man without being swayed by considerations of self-interest? If a ruler puts himself before every other thing and is blind to the good and evil, the justice and the injustice, the rights and wrongs among his subjects, the tears of the innocent who are punished through careless inquiry, work ruin and destruction to himself, his wives and children. Do you attach to yourself the elders, the youths and the renowned medical experts by gifts, friendship and sweet talk? Do you salute brahmanas, guests, gods, ascetics, elders, teachers, holy men whose hearts are turned away from the joys of this world and stately trees in the crossings that form the abode of the higher beings? Do you take care to pursue the three aims of life, each in their proper time? Dharma in the forenoon, wealth or artha in the afternoon, and kama or pleasure at the night? The brahmanas versed in every science and art, the citizens and provincials, do they ever raise their voices in prayer to the Almighty that you reign over them long and happily? Denial of the existence of a future state and untruth, her flying into a rage at our parents, teachers, brahmanas and weaklings when they happen to make a mistake or offend us, carelessness and idleness, omitting to pay our respects to the holy men that are the source and fount of all greatness, half-hearted discharge of our duties, giving a free hand to our senses, taking no counsel with the ministers on the affairs of the state and seeking the advice of those who are ever prone to put false and wrong interpretations on things, careless omission to perform such auspicious acts as to begin the day by beholding mirrors, pearls, black monkeys and wild elephants, rising to receive each and every one that visits you. These 14 evils should be carefully avoided by the king. I hope you do so. The 10 evil habits: hunting, gambling, sleeping during the day, scandal, the company of women, drink, wasting our time with singers, musicians and dancers, and aimless roaming. The 5 defenses: moats, mountains, forests, deserts and troops. The 4 means of success against an enemy: conciliation, bribery, dissension, and force. The 7 elements of a state: king, minister, kingdom, citadel, army, treasury, and friends. The 8 sources of national wealth: farming, commerce, forts, dams, elephant catching, mining, collection of tribute, bringing wastelands under cultivation, and erection of buildings. The 3 aims of life: dharma, artha, and kama. The 3 sciences: anvikshiki, varta, dandaniti, the various means to control our senses. The 6 political expedients: alliance, war, expedition, halt, seeking shelter, and duplicity. The 5 natural visitations: fire, water, disease, famine, and death. The 5 artificial visitations: officials, robbers, enemies, king's favorites, and the king's greed. Watching for an opportunity to estrange our enemy's friends from his side, but gratifying their wishes when they have been slighted by him or threatened or angered. The 20 persons to be avoided: boys, old men, invalids, outcasts, cowards, leaders with craven followers, greedy men, leaders with greedy followers, people that are disgusted with the world, sensualists, followers of various councils, contemners of gods and brahmanas, objects of divine wrath, idlers that look to God for everything, the famine-stricken, leaders of disorganized troops, absentee rulers, the objects of universal enmity and hatred, persons in the grip of maleficent planetary conjunctions, and those who override all truth and dharma, the five constituents of state, minister, kingdom, fortresses, treasury, and army, the mandala composed of 12 kings, the central monarchs, the Vijigishu, the five kings whose dominions are in the front and the four in the rear of his kingdom, the Madhyama or the intermediate, and the Udasina or the indifferent king, warfare composed of expedition, array, match and halt, peace secured by sowing dissensions among the enemy or by seeking the help of strong powers. Have you carefully and thoroughly examined every one of the above categories, rejected the undesirable and retained the useful? Do you take counsel with cabinet of four or three ministers of the type approved by the Shastras and later on with every one of them singly? Does your study of the holy scriptures bear fruit in your reverent adoration of the fires? Does your wealth serve its purpose by contributing to the wants of others and to your own enjoyment? Are your wives faithful and fruitful? Is your life pure and good in consequence of your having sat at the feet of the great and the learned? The line of policy I have been trying to explain to you is calculated to secure you length of days, fame, and aims of life. Is your heart inclined that way? Our sire adopts it as consonant with the principles of virtue and as having the sanction and approval of the great. Do you practice it too? I trust you partake of sweet and delicious viands with others and not alone like a glutton. Do you extend help and protection to the friends that expect it of you? If you lay the above precepts to heart, deal with your punishments moderately and govern your subjects wisely and justly, treading in the steps of your ancestors, you will in this life bring the broad earth under your sway, and when the hour strikes for you to quit this body, your wisdom and holiness will raise you to the worlds of light. And in this wise did Rama instruct Bharata in the mysteries of a king's duties. Mangalam Koshlendraya Mahaniya Gunam Te Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarva Bhaumaya Mangalam.